All right, I think I've been through the gamut of emotions sitting here for an hour and a half, and I'm not sure whether we should just quit now before we get more confused or what. But my perspective is going to be maybe a little different from Arkansas. Soil test potassium, I think, works pretty good for us. We're maybe a little different from the Midwest. I have concerns about our soil test phosphorus working. So anyway, we'll look at the data and go from there. I'd just like to recognize the two peers that I work with and the soil fertility team at the University of Arkansas, Richard Norman and Trent Roberts, because they obviously contribute a lot to all the programs there. Like it or not, you know, a lot of the reason we're in this room is because a paper came out not too long ago called the Potassium Paradox. It certainly challenged, you know, the part that you probably can't read here, it's highlighted, challenged the utility of soil test potassium for making fertilizer recommendations. And that's not always a bad thing because it, you know, brings us together, allows us to review things that, you know, the potassium work goes back to the 1950s and 60s, and obviously, you know, even before that. But, you know, that was a different generation, and sometimes we lose sight of those old but still informative research publications that may communicate different things to us. So we need to look at this as an opportunity to increase our awareness of the strengths and weaknesses in our soil testing tool, because a lot of our constituents basically assume that when they get that report from the laboratory, it's gospel, right? That not necessarily because they completely understand it, but because the university or the soil test lab says that's what you need. Several years ago, I guess this was published in the late 90s, early 2000s, but this was a summary or a survey that Voss put together of the 50 states in the U.S. He broke it down by regions, which you can see here that are kind of shadowed. But I bolded the bottom here. The 50 states, 39 states sent a response back. Of those 39, 28 actually provided information. 11 of the states basically just said, we don't know where our calibration data came from. And I really think that's probably a pretty accurate assessment. And there may be one or two of these 28 over here that maybe didn't quite tell the truth. But at that time, eight of the states, their calibration data supposedly came from the 50s and the 60s, eight came from the 70s, and eight came from the 1980s and early 90s. Interestingly enough, when a follow-up question was for potassium, when were your current recommendations established? Even though 12 of the states only had calibration data from the 80s and 90s, about 22 had data from the 80s and the 90s. So that means that they probably went back and maybe made some adjustments to those curves, or I think in the private lab setting, a lot of times instead of having actual calibration curves, we're going along with that the build and maintain philosophy, so they probably changed the equations a little bit to account for higher yields or something of that nature. So my presentation today is some of it you've already heard from other people, so you'll just hear a same song, second verse. But we're going to look at whether or not crop growth measurements of yield, tissue concentration, and uptake are significantly correlated with soil potassium availability indices. And in Arkansas, we use the Malic III extraction procedure. And Sylvie talked about the calibration step. I'm not going to go into that a whole lot. I'm just going to show one slide that is a multiple regression. After we had verified that our correlation was significant, we incorporated the calibration into a multiple regression step. Anyway, you know, I think that has been useful for us. And then we're going to look at some longer-term research that actually is where our point of confusion is in Arkansas, because we thought maybe when we worked on one particular piece of ground for 10 to 15 years, it would be very clear-cut, and that's not the case. And I'm not going to get into how can we improve the accuracy of soil test-based K recommendations. I think some of that research is obviously ongoing and trying to consider how the cycling of potassium and residues affects it, how soil moisture and the drying process affects it. In Arkansas, we run a lab that does about 200,000 soil samples a year for just Arkansas farmers. But we have to run our lab according to APHIS regulations because we have a little critter called the fire ant in Arkansas. So all of our analysis has to be done after we heat our samples to 150 degrees Fahrenheit. So the first question, how good is the correlation in Arkansas? And I'll address, you know, why these numbers maybe look so high to some of you, maybe from the Midwest. But the crops that we've worked with in Arkansas are primarily rice and irrigated soybean, and we've dabbled in a little bit of Bermuda grass work for the western part of the state where we grow chickens and cows. But using either linear plateau models or a quadratic model, the R-squared for rice and soybean, which contains, you know, 35 to, I think, 40 different site years of data, the R-squared is between 0.63 and 0.76, with slightly, I think, only 10 to 15 site years for Bermuda grass. Using a quadratic model, our R-squared is 0.81. I think those values are fairly high for what most people would find in the literature, apparently, for using oven-dried soil samples. Also, when we look at tissue K concentrations or for Bermuda grass uptake down here on the bottom, linear regression models predicted very well a very strong relationship for these parameters. So I think that we can say, at least in Arkansas, soil test potassium is a pretty good tool for us. At least we feel good about it. Unfortunately, there's, you know, again, listening to everybody else, kind of wonder, you know, maybe if I just got real lucky with all the data sites we picked. So before we move on, I just want to show, you know, once we, for irrigated rice and irrigated soybean, showed that our correlation was good, we developed these contour plots, which was basically a multiple regression allowing for linear and quadratic terms. To where we could maybe estimate for our farmers, depending upon the price of potassium and the expected response based upon relative yield. If your soil test was 75 and you were growing 75 parts per million, and your recommendation was for 100 pounds of potassium or kilograms of potassium per hectare, what would your relative yield be if you reduced that a little bit? So anyway, this is our farmers seem to have liked this because sometimes they don't necessarily want to put out everything that they get on the soil test reports or that their consultant recommends, so this allows them to make maybe a little bit more informed decision. So why were our R-squared values fairly high? Well, when we go through this correlation process, you know, we have statistics now with SAS version 9.4 is what I'm using now, and you look at residual plots and Cook's D statistics, and you find data points that are either considered outliers or influential to your figure, and you talk to the statistician, and you have a lot of hand-holding, and you have to basically make a decision, leave them in or throw them out. And if you throw them out, it makes your numbers look a hell of a lot better. And if you leave them in there, it just looks like a, you know, a big red dot sitting there with a target on it. So, you know, we have chosen to throw them out, but we still include them when we try to publish this information. We leave them on our graph. We just use a different symbol to show that we're not perfect. And there's, you know, for the relationship that we're showing, occasionally something is amiss. Okay. I guess the thing that's encouraging to me is that typically, you know, rice and soybean in Arkansas are grown in rotation. So when we were doing a lot of our correlation calibration studies, we were doing them on experiment station and grower fields. And when we had established a rice test in a grower field, we'd usually establish a soybean test on his farm as well, just to maximize our time in traveling and moving equipment around and what have you. But the nice thing was that when it was all said and done, the critical concentrations were within 10 to 15 parts per million of each other, which the fact that, you know, it was same soils, different fields, but two different crops. Soybean apparently has a little higher critical concentration than rice, which maybe goes back both to how they're grown and the root system. But again, the fact that the critical concentrations were in the same ballpark to me was comforting. The other thing that, again, I guess gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling occasionally is, you know, you talk about driving plots in the ground. Bermuda grass is kind of fun to work with because you don't just drive it in the ground. You actually rid yourself of the crop that you're trying to work with. Bermuda grass is a very heavy feeder of potassium, and if you look at this plot right here where I'm pointing, that's after 5 years of no potassium. Our Bermuda grass turned into crabgrass and foxtail, and even that wouldn't grow very well where we had applied no potassium. So sometimes, I guess my point is here that it is reassuring to occasionally go out and see a potassium deficiency where your soil test predicts that one will occur. After we had done, correlation calibration, we decided, again, after hearing the lack of confidence in soil test potassium, we decided to develop a second data set just to see if we came up with similar numbers. And we basically are calling this our validation trials. We've developed our recommendations. Now we're going out with really a slightly different set of treatments, but they're still according to our recommendations. And this is the results that one of my graduate students who talked just an hour or so ago, we've divided our soil test levels into three categories. Typically, suboptimal would be divided into very low and low. Medium is the category that contains our critical concentration. So, medium is a category where if you're on the lower boundary of this level, we might expect to see a small yield increase. If you're on the upper boundary, you're actually above the critical level because, let's face it, when you do that nice linear plateau and you get the joint point, there's an error associated with it. The medium category, basically about anything that we see there, as long as it's not a very large yield response, we consider correct. But very encouraging is the fact that when our soil tests are above optimum or optimum, we just don't see yield increases. Okay, so that's encouraging, but the thing that's discouraging is from the farmer's perspective, we're telling them that low and very low, I mean, you just interpret that to that your investment in fertilizer is going to give you a return in yield and finances, right? And only a third of the time when we interpret our significance at 0.1 do we see that. Now, if we expand this to 0.25, and, we could have another symposium on what should the p-value be for our data, the success rate increases, okay? I haven't tried to publish anything with a significance level of 0.25, but one of these days, maybe, okay? Anyway, it's an interesting concept, and sometimes I feel like maybe we're too rigorous in what we determine to be significant and not significant. But anyway, this data is encouraging in that it does suggest that our recommendations, that we can interpret our soil test and give recommendations, at least in two of our three categories, that are very consistent. So now to the long-term trial. And this is where, if I need Prozac, this is where I have to start taking it. We started a trial back in 2000, and this is cropped in a one-to-one rice soybean rotation. The rice is flood irrigated. The soybean is also flood irrigated as needed. And if you look at the overall annual means of soil test K from the no potassium plots, and these are for 0 to 10 centimeter depth samples, we can see that linear regression shows that we're declining at a rate of about 3 parts per million per year. The problem is, you see, this line is tracking on about two-thirds of our data points, and the other third is either far below or far above and almost what looks to be a parallel plane with the regression line that's shown as the overall average. So if you look at just some of the descriptive statistics here, we started out at 80 parts per million, very uniform across the entire test area. Since then, the untreated or the no potassium control plots have ranged from 35 to 103 parts per million, and the annual change in soil test potassium has fluctuated between 48 and minus 48 and plus 22 parts per million. And this is just with grain removal. All of the stubble is being returned to these plots. And we can grow 200 bushel plus rice, and we can grow 60 and 70 bushel soybeans year in and year out on these plots, but we're not removing the amount of potassium with that grain that would amount to this type of reduction. The other thing that I'm not showing you here on this particular soil, after 15 years, if you look at the build coefficients, which so many soil test labs seem to be in love with, it takes over 45 kilograms or pounds of K2O to build soil test by one part per million on this soil. So we can add potassium all day long, but our soil test doesn't change by much. I'm dealing with that in a paper right now, trying to figure out how to rebut the reviewer comments. But the potassium is there, but we've added it. It hasn't been necessarily removed. These are poorly drained soils, so I don't think it's leached. But yet it doesn't show up on Malic 3. If we use the boiling nitric acid, we pick a lot more of it up. But whether or not that's plant available or not is debatable. If we look at the overall yield trend, and here we have converted both our rice and soybean yields to percent relative yield. So we see, again, over time that our percent relative yield of both crops decreased from year one all the way till about 2008, and then we're kind of making like an inverted check mark here. I'm not sure what's happened the last few years, but maybe yields are on the way up with the untreated check. But if you compare that to our fertilized plots represented by the dashed line up here, you can clearly see that there is a potassium response here over time. Unfortunately, when you substitute soil test potassium of that no potassium control for a year, even when we designate, you know, rice, which is the blue diamonds, and soybeans, which is the black dots, if you just look at the black dots, it maybe looks like there's a relationship across soil test potassium that might be pretty good with that limited amount of data, if we exclude this guy down here. But for rice, it's just kind of all over the place. But irregardless, when we throw both of them together, our R squared is now 0.19. So this is kind of discouraging that we can't go onto one piece of ground, do the research over a period of years, and come up with a better relationship. When we look at the Bermuda grass, and again, I haven't got a ton of data, but this is a five-year study that we did had the opportunity to do right out the back door of our lab in Fayetteville, to where, you know, the annual K removal by a good Bermuda grass crop is 300 kilograms of K per hectare per year. Magnitudes of order greater than what you would remove with rice, soybeans, corn, or wheat. And I think that the greater K removal that we saw in this particular plot is greater than the annual, all the other factors combined that tend to influence our annual fluctuations in soil test potassium. So if you look at this, our soil test potassium, this is replicate data, that's why you're seeing multiple data points there. But the blue line indicates that over the first three crops, we saw a linear decline in soil test potassium, at which point we then reached some type of equilibrium that the soil had attained. We were still producing extremely low Bermuda grass and losing stand, but the soil test potassium for these last few years did not change. If you remember previously, the slide I showed you from the 15-year rice soybean trial, soil test potassium declined by 3 parts per million per year. It has declined by 22 parts per million per year here over a three-year period. And that's, you know, when we had nutrient management regulations occur in western Arkansas to where, you know, our guys that never buy fertilizer because they always had poultry litter to apply to their soils, when they could no longer apply potassium or poultry litter because their phosphorus was hundreds of parts per million, the soil test potassium has declined steadily since 2006 when those regulations were occurred because they stopped using poultry litter, but they're still not buying muriate of potash. And clearly, again, with our little bit of research with Bermuda grass, they're losing hay yield due to potassium deficiency. The other encouraging thing from the Bermuda grass, and this is, I guess, 10 different or 3 different trials, 10 different site years of data. When we just simply look at the balance between K inputs and K removals with the harvested forage and the annual change, okay, from 1 year to the next in soil test potassium, this is a pretty good relationship. I mean, the R squared is 0.52. But it's encouraging at least to be able to do a checkbook balance on a system and see things increase or decrease like you might expect. So just a couple of summaries. Soil test potassium in Arkansas has utility for making K management decisions. It's not perfect, but we're trying to understand. We're doing some of the same work that's being done in the Midwest looking at soil test on dry versus moist. We'll deal with APHIS when we get done with that, if moist turns out to be better. But right now, I mean, our preliminary information suggests that that's not going to be an issue for us for whatever reason. And whether it's because we're dealing with relatively low cation exchange capacity, and I'm talking, you know, 10 to 15 centimoles of charge per kilogram, alpha sols with 1.5 to 2% organic matter, or exactly what it is, I don't know. But we see differences in a few soils, but not all of them, okay, with wet versus or moist versus dry. But clearly the concepts of soil testing are apparent in our correlation calibration relationships, and that makes us feel good about that. I'm still not a proponent of precision agriculture because I don't think it's accurate. And honestly, I don't know how we can use correlation calibration recommendations that are based on correlation calibration relationships that have R squareds of 0.2 and 0.3 and feel good about where we're putting the nutrients. So that's why in Arkansas I'm adamant that if you want to do potassium, because we feel pretty good about precision placement of potassium, or at least with our recommendations, go ahead and do it. But for phosphorus, either do it or don't do it, okay, because we really don't know. And right now our validation efforts are supporting what at least our correlation calibration shows. So where are we at in Arkansas? Well, we're going to continue doing some of this. And yeah, it's starting to get a little boring at times, but we're going to validate what our soil test P and K to at least develop something that we can defend should we have to defend it. We are probably then going to move into some of our other crops and see whether the framework of the recommendations we have for cotton and corn are working once we get done with the rice and the soybean. Clearly, I think this whole thing about potassium cycling in the residues is affecting our soil test potassium from 1 year to the next. I'm not sure exactly how all that works, whether it's a wet year or a dry year. But clearly, I think, again, when we look at our row crop systems and see the annual fluctuations there, but we don't necessarily see them in systems where we're removing very large quantities of K, I think it plays a role. And with that, a lot of the research that you saw today was funded by different groups, including our Arkansas and rice and soybean checkoff and our fertilizer tonnage fees programs, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak at this symposium.